This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyik. We use our sense of touch to make sense of the environment around us, but it is also essential for our emotional well-being. So in a previous Brainwaves episode on this show, we even talked about how maternal touch could directly impact DNA as seen in studies with baby mice. But during this COVID-19 pandemic, we, especially during the movement control order, when our activities and movements have been restricted, we've gone several weeks without being able to meet, touch and hug a lot of our friends and family. And this could be a possibility that extends a lot longer than these couple of months. So joining us on today's Brainwave segment, we have, as always, neurogeneticist Dr. Azlina Ahmad Anwar to help us find out what happens if, you know, if we and our brains are starved of touch. How are you doing, Dr. Azlina?
Hello, I'm good. In these circumstances, not too bad.
Okay. We're talking about touch today. And, you know, from your personal perspective, how has it been for you to refrain from the usual kinds of daily experiences of touching, you know, in terms of shaking hands with people or to salam people? What's it been like for you?
Well, I've kind of, since the MCO, I haven't really been out. So I've been very strict with myself because I have elderly grandparents at home and children. So I kind of don't want to, you know, take the risk. So I haven't had too much problem because I'm still able to touch, you know, my other family members. But I can imagine when I go back to work, it's just going to really, you know, be very, very different, I think, because you instinctively want to, you know, reach out and touch somebody while they're talking, you know, sort of like a reassuring touch, or, you know, you want to salam somebody. And you know, Raya period as well, and I was talking about it, you know, with my husband, how do we do that? And how, if we can't salam or we can't hug somebody, how could we still recreate the same kind of feeling that we would get if in replace of a salam or a hug? So maybe we can talk about that a little bit later.
But if we go back to the starting point, and this is something that every kid learns as well, and we teach them about our senses and touch being one of the senses. So how do we detect this sense called touch?
Okay, so we have, you know, skin, which is the largest organ in the body, and the skin has a rich array of different receptors that can detect different types of stimuli. So we can detect pressure, we can detect temperature, we can detect vibration. So when we touch somebody, if it depends on the type of touch. So for example, when you salam to someone or when you hug someone, usually it's a kind of a light to medium kind of pressure. So that will kind of, you know, stimulate a certain type of sensory nerves in the skin. And those sensory nerves will send information up our spinal cord to a part of the brain which is called the thalamus, which is kind of like a relay station. It's a bit like KL Central. You have a lot of trains coming in, a lot of information coming in, and then a lot of information going out to all different types of, to all different areas. So the thalamus will then process that information a little bit, and then it will then send the sensory information to a specific part of the brain called the somatosensory cortex.
Okay. So all kinds of touch sensations go to that part of the brain?
From the skin, yes, primarily. But we also have other sensation that we also get from our joints that will go to a slightly different part of the brain called the parietal cortex. But from the skin, yes, to the somatosensory cortex.
And then how is our sense of touch then mapped in the brain?
Yeah, so it's actually really interesting. So if you think of our body, you know, different parts of the body are more sensitive than others. And why is it more sensitive? Because in those particular areas, we have more of these sensory nerves. So you have more of these detectors to be able to detect the stimuli, the touch, or the pressure that that we feel. So in the brain, in this part of the brain called the somatosensory cortex, it's like a strip. So if you think of the top of your head, in both hemispheres, there's a single strip. And that particular strip, the different body parts are mapped on different locations along that strip. So you have one part which is for the leg, another part for the cheek, another part for the fingers. And if that particular area is more sensitive, then it has a larger area it represented in this particular strip. So, for example, our fingers will have a larger area in this somatosensory cortex that receive information compared to other parts of our body where that are less sensitive. So, for example, normally the trunk, the neck. So you have smaller regions in that particular part of the brain that represent those areas. And so when we get stimulus in at our fingers, when we feel something, we know where on our body that stimulus is. So that you know that you've been touched on your back, you know that you've been touched on your knee, for example. And so that's how we know quite precisely for many areas exactly where we've received that touch.
And when do we develop this sense of touch, you know? Does it go as far back as when the baby is in the womb?
Yeah, so that particular brain area is already developed in a baby. And it's really interesting because I think about a year ago, there was a study that looked at, you know, when babies are in the womb, they move a lot, right? They move a lot. And people used to think of that in terms of, you know, they are stimulating their muscles and their motor neurons, the neurons that control the muscles. But actually, this one study, what they showed was that the babies are actually, when they kick and their feet or their hands feel the womb, the inside of the womb, that information is actually relayed back to them so that they develop a kind of sense of space. They know that, you know, oh, that, you know, my leg is positioned in that way because it touched that part, right? And that's actually really important for the development of the motor system as well, our movement, because, you know, when we move, we need to know where our limbs are, we need to know what we're touching, our feet are touching on the floor, for example. So that kind of is a very important developmental stage in a baby's life. And actually some children who have, for example, neuromuscular disorders, whereby they have weak muscles, right? And their muscles are degenerating. Actually, in the womb, you can already see that because of these weaker muscles, they're moving less. But the knock-on impact, the secondary impact is as well, the babies may also have a slightly undeveloped sense of space in their brain. And that's something that's sort of becoming more understood now. Yeah. And then, of course, the regions, as I mentioned, along the strip that represent different parts of the brain, that is actually also very dynamic in adulthood. So, for example, if you use a part of your body more, okay, you will have a larger representation than somebody else who doesn't use that part of the body that much. For example, an artist who, you know, feels things, a blind person who uses Braille, right? They will have the part of the brain which represents the fingers much bigger than in a normal sighted person. And also, actually, smartphone use. So smartphone use now, because, you know, now what we need to do is our brain needs to learn how delicately to touch those buttons, yes, on our smartphone. Mm. If you remember the phones that we had last time, the older phones, you had to press, yes, right, the button. But this one, now our keyboard is flat. And so we've had to sort of relearn how hard do we press it, and those sort of very fine, delicate movements so that, you know, you don't make too many typos. You know, all that actually is changing our brain. And for example, if you learn a new skill as well later in adulthood, you know, that corresponding part of the brain will also change. So it's actually a very dynamic process.
Okay. And so we'll go for a quick break now. But when we come back, I'd like to look at what happens when babies and toddlers are deprived of touch, how that affects their development, especially the development of their senses and their brains. And, you know, taking the COVID-19 pandemic as the context, we could look at what happens when people are deprived of touch for a prolonged amount of time. And, you know, what can we do, as you've said, Dr. Azlina, what can we do to sort of make up for this lack of touch at this time, especially in certain cultures where touch is very meaningful to us? So I'm speaking to Dr. Azlina Ahmad Anwar today, our neurogeneticist, on her monthly Brainwave series. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyi. Joining me on the line is neurogeneticist Dr. Azlina Ahmad Anwar for her Brainwave segment. We're looking at the touch sensation today. And before the break, Dr. Azlina has explained how from the time that we touch something, and that sensation is detected on the skin, how the message is sent to the brain, how that particular area of the brain, the somatosensory cortex, responds to the touch sensations from different parts of the body. Some parts of the body are more sensitive than others. On that note, Dr. Azlina, well, different people respond differently to touch as well. For instance, I'm not someone who's very fond of having to shake hands with people, for instance, having to even hug relatives. So, you know, this social distancing thing is working out for me, but what accounts for that that variation in people's attitude towards touch?
Yeah, that's a good question. So a lot of it, I think, has to do with perhaps experience, early life experiences, for example, that, you know, something happened that made you attach a certain context to, you know, not liking that very much. So, for example, you know, I mean, a very easy one is if a person is a germaphobe, let's say, right? And so they through either having watched a documentary about, you know, germs are everywhere, and so, you know, don't touch anything. So they kind of develop this kind of, you know, phobia. So then they don't want to touch anything. And so that prevents them from wanting to touch another person because they have that kind of in their head. Alternatively, you know, it may also mean that growing up, the person wasn't exposed to a lot of affectionate touching, right? And so, you know, they kind of just grow up like not needing it, or they find other ways to soothe themselves or other ways to connect to somebody. And then, of course, then, you know, you have perhaps some unfortunate scenarios where a person has been touched and been made uncomfortable. And so now that, you know, the even the thought of, you know, connecting with somebody through touch is an unpleasant situation. They don't feel rewarded because of it. So, you know, people go through so many different types of experiences in their life, and that really feeds into how they perceive the feeling of touch.
You know, touch is not just a functional thing that you do. It's not just for you to touch and feel whether something is hot or whether it's spiky and going to cause pain, right? Because touch also includes, as we've been talking about, shaking hands, salam, hugs, or the negative kind of touch, a slap, you know, something that induces harm and pain. How do all of those different kinds of touches affect the brain?
Okay, so it's all about kind of when you've had that experience that is stored in a memory, right? You associate a particular touch with a particular experience as a memory, so that when you are now confronted with a situation that requires you to touch somebody, then your brain kind of retrieves that memory chip and then your frontal cortex, which is the front part of the brain, which is involved in evaluating and decision making, then they will sort of say, okay, what's the situation about? How do I feel about it? How do I act? And so that's how the brain sort of processes situation. And it really relies on your previous experience and the memory that you have of that and the context that has been placed on that memory. So when you're in that situation, your brain processes it differently.
Okay. But we also hear that physical touch is especially important for babies and toddlers. And why is that?
You know, it's a way of soothing the baby. Of course, you know, any mother or parent will know that if a baby is crying, you know, you automatically pick them up and hug them. And, you know, that kind of calms them down. So what actually happens, right, when you give them that tactile stimulation of the touch is that it's actually causing, so when the skin receives that that pressure or that sense of touch, okay, that sends information to the brain, and that causes a range of hormones to be released, right? So the one, of course, which is very famous is the oxytocin, which is sometimes people call it the love hormone. Mm-hmm. It does a lot more than that. But, you know, particularly in the context of a mother and a baby, okay, a lot of research has been done looking at oxytocin and this sort of close skin-to-skin contact, okay, is required to increase the level of oxytocin in the brain. And then oxytocin then it's released by a part of the brain called the hypothalamus, okay, which releases a range of other hormones as well. And then the oxytocin then sends information to other parts of the brain, for example, the part of the brain that involved in memory. So then the baby remembers, like, you know, well, you know, this made me feel good last time, you know. And so then as I mentioned, the frontal part of the brain then evaluates and tells the baby, oh, you know, it's my mother, I remember this feeling, you know, I remember that smell, I remember that touch. And so then the baby's brain will actually, through the action of these release of these oxytocin hormone and others, will help to lower the blood pressure and lower stress hormones like cortisol. So all together in combination, that helps to calm the baby down. So in particular, you know, a lot of work has been done in maternal care, looking at it. And actually, as you mentioned, you know, in a previous show, I also talked about a paper, a really interesting paper, that said that, you know, the physical contact that a mother gives to her baby isn't just about, you know, releasing all these different hormones, but it can actually directly impact the DNA. So you can make, you know, changes to the DNA, how much of that particular hormone is going to be made, you know, and actually it can also have a positive effect on the development of the neurons, how the neurons connect with each other. So they actually make the neurons, you know, healthier, so to speak, and much more efficient. So that's why, you know, maternal care is really important for the brain development.
So then what happens if you deprive a baby or a young child or even an adult of that physical contact? So, you know, in children, I guess we'd be looking at cases where they're neglected. Mm-hmm. Or in adults, you know, prisoners in isolation or astronauts in space for long missions. What happens during these prolonged periods of sensory deprivation?
So if we look at children who have been deprived for long periods without physical touch, without caring physical touch, mm-hmm. okay, then what actually happens, and this was shown in studies looking at orphanages in Romania. This is, you know, a very famous case study, yes, where these children were neglected by their carers and their nurses because, you know, there were just too few carers. And so the children weren't, you know, they were fed, they were bathed, but they weren't hugged, they weren't, you know, given any affection. And so many of them went on to develop, you know, a whole host of mental disorders, you know, and they really struggled to cope, you know, with life. And they also had issues with learning difficulties, for example. Now, interestingly, what they found was that if you actually intervene before the children are 2 years old, you can actually reduce the effects of that early neglect. So some of these children, perhaps, you know, they were adopted before they turned two into caring families. And so the studies then, when they followed up which children were placed in caring homes, which children remained in the orphanages, and which children were adopted but not into such affectionate families, you know, you could actually see the impact on their academic ability later in life, and also, you know, not just academic but also psychological development. Yeah. So that kind of two-year period is a very critical time. And it actually, that two-year period, if you think about it, also corresponds to a lot of the advice that people say about breastfeeding, right? People always recommend, if not breastfeeding, but at least, you know, even if you don't breastfeed, but if you feed your baby formula milk, but still, you know, you must hug them. Don't just, you know,
prop them up.
Prop them up. Yeah, that physical touch. You can feed them with the bottle, but, you know, hold them while you're doing it. And then if we talk about the adults. So adults, particularly, you know, older adults, maybe they would have developed other coping strategies. You know, they find a surrogate, you know, they get pets. they'll cuddle the pet, they'll cuddle the cat, they'll cuddle the dog. So they get that from, you know, a non-human, whereas, you know, and so, you know, humans are resilient like that, you know, especially adults. And the ones that are particularly, I suppose, vulnerable, more vulnerable are those that are, you know, the teenage period, you know, where they tend to isolate themselves from their parents and they don't want to have anything to do with you mm-hmm. as a parent. But still, you know, it's very important to still try to reach out. Now, how much of an impact that has, whether or not later life, social isolation in later life has as bad an impact as early life, as it does in early life, that is not fully researched yet, okay? In terms of, you know, changes to brain structure mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. There have been some studies that suggest you do have some underdeveloped areas, but, you know, not as major as the children, but in the adults it would be more in terms of you know, the psychological impact of it, and that may not necessarily be because of brain structure, but because of how the neurons sort of connect with each other and the context in, you know, in memories that you have of those particular experiences.
Like what you explained earlier about how different experiences in the earlier years of your life would influence how you are receptive or not receptive towards touch.
Right.
Yeah. But then, you know, if we look at what many of us are experiencing right now with the COVID-19 pandemic, with social and physical distancing, well, physical distancing, right, more so than social, I suppose. Is there any way to say or to predict what kind of impact that would have on us? Well, you know, in terms of changes in the brains, in terms of, you know, psychological changes?
Yeah. Ooh. You know, I suppose we would need to look at, you know, case studies of, like, as you mentioned earlier, prisoners, you know, prisoners that have been in isolation mm-hmm. and to see sort of what the impact would be. I mean, I would imagine, you know, I mean, prisoners in isolation are even worse than what we are because, mm-hmm. you know, they can't Zoom, you know, they can't make online calls, they can't text.
Yes.
So they're like,
they're,
you know,
deprived of a lot more, yes.
Zero isolation. So they're probably not such a good comparison to what we are going through. I mean, you know, as people say, you know, this is unprecedented, right? So we don't know. Mm-hmm. However, you know, I think short periods of time, such as what we've been going through, won't have a major impact as such, because I said we are blessed with technology, you know. If this was to happen 20, 30 years ago, when you didn't have hand phones, you only had the telephone, you know, everybody would be on the telephone, right? Yes. Talking to each other and finding ways of talking over the gate to each other, yes. You know, which you don't do now, which you just sort of text or send pictures. So I think because of the technology, my prediction, okay, I may be wrong, but my prediction would be the brain won't be too affected, mm-hmm. because actually we are able to find other ways to still recreate, mm-hmm. right, the feeling that we get when we have that physical touch. So it's not just the touch itself, it's how we feel when people touch mm-hmm. us. Mm-hmm. It's you know, like I said, this the release of oxytocin, the release of these, you know, the dopamine and serotonin that make you feel rewarded for being touched, right? That soothing touch, a reassuring touch. That's what is important. Mm-hmm. So if we can replace, right, find ways in which we can still have that surge of these happy, rewarding feelings without the physical touch, I think we will be okay.
So apart from, you know, using other forms of social interactions to replace and to give us that same positive emotional response, mm-hmm. Apart from, let's say, being able to call somebody, being able to video call, are there perhaps technologies that could utilize touch or change how we touch, such as smartphones or walking sticks? Do we take our cue from that?
Yes. Somebody needs to develop a smartphone that can hug you.
They have pillows for that.
That's right. Everybody go out and buy a giant teddy bear and just hug it, you know, and you know, feel it that way and you know, try to recreate it. You know, I mean,
is that good enough? Will that give you the same
comforting feeling? Well, for some people, it would be good enough. Others may require a bit more. I don't know. You know, I think we just have to be creative. You know, I think the key thing is that we have to find ways to overcome the situation. However we do it, you know, for example, you know, even just self-massage is soothing, you know, like, for example, people when they are anxious, when they're worried, you know, they usually kind of, you know, rub themselves, if you notice, or they rub their fingers, they bring their hands. Actually, that is a soothing mechanism, and that's actually helping, you know, it's applying pressure to the sensory nerves that I talked about, and it's trying to kind of, you know, okay, relax the body. So, you know, if you are on your own, I suppose, and you don't have any dolls, you don't have any pets, you know, you could kind of, you know, engage in, you know, activities such as like yoga or, you know, massage or something like that. You know, take your time to kind of relax yourself, you know, and make yourself kind of feel happy. If you live like, you know, if you live with other people, then you can kind of, you know, give each other reassuring, you know, touches and massages as well.
Mm. You started off by talking about, you know, the upcoming Raya Festival, and you won't be able to salam, you know, which is such a big part of your culture. Mm. So, you know, what's your advice for getting around that?
So I'm going to take it positively. I'm going to say, okay, I can't hug you now, but, you know, when all this kind of gets better, you know, then you just pay them a visit and, you know, you hug them then, you know, and of course, you know, you still have to make sure that you take all the precautions, wash your hands, especially if they're elderly, the more vulnerable. But, you know, you can hug them later, you know, so don't get too depressed. You know, hopefully you will still have the chance have them later. If you still want to have some sort of connection, some kind of human connection, what, you know, you can do it in other ways, other emotionally evoking ways. You know, you smile more, you know, you have to sort of be more verbal. You know, last time if you met somebody, you could just shake their hand and, you know, just say hello, you know, and the fact that you shake their hand is kind of enough that you are acknowledging that that person is there. Right. But now if you can't shake their hand anymore, you know, you now have to look them in the eye and you have to sort of say, you know, hello and pay more attention that way. So it's just kind of, you know, adapting to the situation and having hope that, you know, later we will be able to resume our hugs and pats on the back.
So Dr. Zelina, can I get you to just wrap up with a key takeaway about touch today?
So I've repeated this many times, whenever you talk about having a healthy brain, you know, the people always talk about exercise and they always talk about diet and they always talk about, you know, social stimulation or interaction. But I have been sort of, you know, mentioning that we also need to have this physical touch. So, do find a way, you know, at whatever level that you are comfortable with and whatever the level that other person is comfortable with, of course. You know, don't go over, but, you know, do find a way to connect, you know, physically, or if you can't physically, then you have to still find another way to reassure each other. You know, and to find that human connection. So I'm sure, you know, we'll get through this. You know, we'll be fine. I don't think it's going to make a lasting change to our brain. Some people may feel extra lonely, but, you know, just be hopeful. I think, you know, be hopeful that we will have an opportunity in the future to resume what we're used to doing.
And there are other ways to reach out to people. It's physical distancing. It's not social distancing. Make your phone calls, make your video calls.
And by, you know, and they always say kita jaga kita, right? So, you know, you can also, by not touching somebody, also feel rewarded because you're doing something good.
Yes.
You know, but then if you need it, you know, bear in mind that this is not going to be forever, you know, so there will be a time when you will be able to hug someone.
Thank you so much, Dr. Azlina. I've been speaking to Dr. Azlina Ahmad Anwar, neurogeneticist, about touch on this Health and Living segment. You've been listening to The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.